Chapter 5. For the chief priest selected men of the best merit and of excellent education, due to the distinction of their parentage. They had not only mastered the Judean literature, but instead had even made a serious study of the Hellenic literature. And for this reason, they were well qualified for being the elders, and brought it to fruition as occasion demanded. And they possessed a great natural disposition for the negotiations and questions arising from the law, espousing the middle course, for this is always the best course to pursue. They forsook any rugged and barbarous attitude of the mind. But in the same way, they also rose above conceit and never assumed an air of superiority over others. But they engaged in discourse and in listening to and answering each and every one as is appropriate. And all of them carefully observed these rules and went further in wishing to excel each other in them. And they were, one and all, worthy of their leader and his outstanding excellence. Now it was possible to perceive how they loved Eleazar by their unwillingness to be torn away from him, and also his love for them. And in addition to writing to the king concerning their safe return, he urged Andreas to take many active steps to this end, and asked me too to collaborate to the utmost extent of my ability. And although we announced that we would be concerned about these matters, he also declared that he was very apprehensive, for he knew that the king, out of his love of good things, considered it of supreme importance that whenever he was informed of a man who excelled his contemporaries in outstanding goodness and mindfulness, to have that man brought to his court. For I understand that he made the beautiful saying that, by having at his court men of righteousness and wisdom, he would provide the greatest protection for his kingdom. This was the unreserved advice given to him by his friends for his benefit. The point is amply confirmed in those whom he sent off. And Eleazar affirmed on oath that he would never permit the men to leave if it was merely his own personal interest that constituted the impelling motive. But he was only dispatching them for the common improvement of all the citizens.
"For the good life,"
he said,
"consists in observing the laws. And this aim is achieved by hearing much more than by reading."
Therefore, by these pronouncements, and others similar to them, he clearly showed his attitude toward them. Now, it is worthwhile to briefly mention the information which he gave in reply to the questions raised through us. For it is my opinion that the majority of men shows a certain amount of curiosity for the parts of their legislation concerning both the foods and drinks and creatures considered to be unclean. For example, we inquired, "Why, since there is one creation only, are some things considered unclean for eating, but others even for touching?" For the legislation shows a terror of demons in most matters, But it altogether shows a terror of demons in these matters. In reply, he began as follows.
You observe,
he declared,
what an effect our modes of life and relationships produce upon us. Inasmuch as through bad relationships, men become perverted and are miserable throughout their entire life. But if they mix with wise and prudent companions, they rise above ignorance and achieve progress in life. First, our lawgiver gave express commands relating to piety and righteousness, and issued precise sets of instructions about them, not merely by prohibitions, but by the use of examples as well, together with the manifest damages and the visitation sent by God upon the guilty.
For Eleazar began, first of all, by demonstrating that God is one, and that his power is shown in everything, every place being filled with his domination, and that none of the things on earth which men do secretly are hidden from him, but instead, that all the deeds of any man are manifest to him, as well as what is to come to pass in the future. Therefore, by establishing these matters accurately and setting them out plainly, he demonstrated that even if a man considers doing what is evil, he would not escape, let alone even after the deed is done. For this reason, he indicated the power of God through the entire legislation. Therefore, this was his introduction. And he proceeded to show that all the rest of men,
except ourselves,
as he said,
believe that there are many gods, even though men themselves are much more powerful than the gods whom they vainly worship. For they make images of stone and wood, declaring them to be likenesses of those who have made some beneficial discovery for their living, and they worship them, even though they have clear proof that they possess no senses. For if the existence of any god depended on the criterion of invention, it would be absolutely foolish, because in that case, the inventors have simply taken certain already created objects and by combining them together demonstrated their usefulness without themselves being their creators. Therefore, it is profitless and useless to defy equals. And yet, even today, there are many who are much more inventive and much more learned than the ancients, and yet they would never come to worship these men. And yet, those who have invented these fabrications and myths are usually ranked to be the wisest of the Hellenes. There is surely no need to mention the rest of the very foolish people, Egyptians and those like them, who have put their confidence in wild beasts and most of the creeping things and monstrous animals, worship them, and sacrifice to them both while alive and dead. In his wisdom, the legislator, in a comprehensive survey of each particular part, and being endowed by God for the knowledge of universal truths, surrounded us with unbroken palisades and iron walls to prevent our mixing with any of the other peoples in any matter, being thus kept pure in body and soul, preserved from false beliefs, worshiping the only God, omnipotent over all creation. Hence, the leading priests among the Egyptians, conducting many close investigations and with practical experience of affairs, gave us the title Men of God, which is ascribed exclusively to those who worship the true God, and not to those who are concerned with meat and drink and clothes, for their entire disposition leads them to find solace in these things. Such concerns are of no account among the people of our race, but throughout the whole of their lives, their main objective is concern with the sovereignty of God. So, to prevent us from being perverted by contact with others or by mixing with evil influences, he hedged us in on all sides with strict observances connected with meat and drink and touch and hearing and sight, after the manner of the law. In general, everything is similarly constituted in regard to natural reasoning, being governed by one supreme power. And in each particular, everything has a profound reason for it, both the things from which we abstain in use and those of which we partake. For illustration, I will briefly give you one or two examples.